Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic.
This episode brought to you by Fool's Moon Entertainment, a tabletop RPG publisher that's based out of Canada, so you know they have my support. Go Canada! They have produced games such as Fox Magic, Keepsakes, Wittershins, and their upcoming Advanced Story Point system. Check them out at their website, and the link's in the show notes.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Covenstead. We are here. I'm Danny, and as ever, I'm with my co-host and partner in crime, Todd.
Partner in crime, I like that. Ooh. What kind of nasty, terrible things are we up to today, I wonder?
From what I understand, we're going to talk about magic today. The practice of magic.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So this is going to be another one of those episodes where I'm going to ask you a lot of questions as the person who is the non-magic practitioner. But yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's a really wide topic. There's a bunch of different ways that we could go. And because we want to get into magic in the gaming sphere and how that, you know, can work in different RPGs, it felt like a good way to start was to kind of get into, you know, magic and how you use it, view it, and practice it as a Wiccan and everything like that, because that's still some of the, you know, I have a bunch of different questions that I know that I have as far as how all of that works in your day-to-day life mm-hmm. and everything. So yeah, that's what I was thinking we could talk about today.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a complicated topic, as you can imagine. I mean, the way witches use magic, and as we discussed before, there's a difference between being a Wiccan and doing all the religion part of it and being a witch. However, they overlap in a lot of ways in terms of philosophy, but I'm just going to focus on the witchcraft and the magic part. And it's one of those things where magic is taking energy that's there and transforming it into something else with your intention, transforming it into something specific. And that's a very basic of it. And if you ask anybody, you'll get different definitions. But that's how I see it personally. Magic is putting influence on things. And it's taking energy. It's like Newton's law, you know? Energy is not created or destroyed. It merely changes form. And that's kind of what it's all about. You have energy there and you use it and you gather it and you focus it on an intention and you use that energy to inflict changes, right? With that comes, as Spider-Man's Uncle Ben said, great responsibility, okay? Because if you can affect things, you have responsibility there, right? If you believe that you can affect things, then you have a responsibility to do so responsibly. And that's a big thing that you have to learn when you start using magic and you start to see it have an effect on your life, you know? You have to do things with care and intention. And that leaks into every day. Being a witch and believing that you can change things and what you do has power means that no matter what, you have to be careful what you do and say. Because even if you're not doing it in a, like, formal context, like, you're not in a circle, you're not, like, lighting candles, you're not doing any of that stuff, any of the stuff you would do in your magical practice, just because you're not doing that, your words and your actions still have energy. They have power. Even in a mundane sense, right? And so because of that, you have to be very careful. And that is kind of the lesson. You're not just doing magic. You yourself are the magic. Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah. But I at the same time, too, I've already kind of got some follow-up questions. So when you talk about using it responsibly, you know, like, what exactly is it that you mean by that? In the sense where it's like, you need to go into magic with the purest of intentions, maybe even more honest intentions, or else things could backfire. Kind of like, is it a case of, if you were to go to someone's intervention, but you go in angry and you're bitter at the person who's getting the intervention, it's, you've, you know, they got the potential of things backfiring and getting completely out of hand. Whereas if you go with the intention of, they need my help, I'm there to help them heal and begin the healing process and everything like that, then you actually get the desired effect. Is that kind of what you mean by using it responsibly?
Yeah, exactly. All of those things. Okay. Using it because, like I said, even mundane things, like if you're going to go to an intervention, right? The energy that you bring to that and what you do matters, right? It matters. If you're going in there with the intention to help, that means that you accept that that help may not look like you expect it to, right? It may not be the help that you think they need. It may not be what you want to do, but it's what's necessary. So for the happiness and the well-being of that person, that's what you do. Instead of fostering your own ideas about what they need. And that's the same idea with magic and doing it on yourself or others. You mentioned honesty, and that is an incredibly important part of a magical life. You have to be honest about why you're doing something. You have to be honest about why you want this thing to change, right? And that's a hard thing to do. Okay. That's a hard thing to do. It's why I admire doing magic so much, because it requires, done in the right way, it requires you to be honest with yourself. It requires you to look at things you may not to look at. It requires you to sit there and think with uncomfortable things that you may have said or done, or the selfish reasons why you might want to do something. And requires you to be honest with yourself before you do anything if you want it to work. And that works for anything. I mean, I'm talking about these are principles of magic, but the interesting part and the lovely part about it is that these things apply to so many other things that you wouldn't say are magic in nature, but they are, right? Because it's energy. And when I say you are magic, that's the difference. Magic isn't something outside of yourself that you practice, right? We ourselves as beings with energy and beings from the universe, we are magic. We are that. We have that ability in ourselves. And if that's the case, then whatever you say and do matters, because it's affecting everything around you. And that's not just in a magical sense, like you're consciously trying to do something. But even if you just go into work, right, and you're in a bad mood, or you're in a good mood, or something happens, or somebody says something mean to you, how you respond matters. Like the energy and the philosophy and your consideration of what you say and do is a life principle, not just a magic one, right?
Okay. Yeah, okay. And that's a really neat way, like when we get to the next time, when we start talking about magic in gaming, that whole idea of the intent of the magic, you know, kind of like that honest, emotional ingredient, I guess, is a way of looking at it, is something that you don't really see a lot when it comes to fiction. It's always a big focus on, you know, like the end results, you know, like the big flashbang and everything else like that. So I think that's really neat and interesting. And I know myself, as a non-magical person, non-magic practitioner, I hear a lot of that, and I can understand it in the sense of like that sense of creativity. I know things that I've worked on when I go into it and I know exactly what it is that I want something to accomplish or what I'm trying to get out of it. It feels like I'm getting a much better result rather than trying to make something simply for the sake of making it. You know, like when I made Pandora, I knew exactly what it was that I needed to do. And so as a result, I was able to make very clear, very informed decisions. And the end result to me is exactly what I was aiming for. Whereas there's some other stuff where I was just doing it out of a more technical purpose. And those are the ones that I find when I look back on them, it's just like, yeah, that didn't quite hit the mark. Yeah, that part. Really kind of resonates with me, that whole sense of that pure honesty within yourself into what you're using it for.
Right.
Okay.
Neat. Yeah. And magic in and of itself, right? Like the difference is right. Like I'm talking about influence and how it works, whether you're doing mundane or magic. The difference with like actually practicing magic is like you are consciously trying to affect something you probably normally wouldn't affect, right? And, you know, a lot of this is really great and I've thought about, and I've been working with and going to some outer court classes here in Phoenix. So a lot of this came from a discussion that the outer court had a couple weeks ago about this very thing, right? So shout out to them if any of them listen to this. Our discussion really is enlightening on this one, and I'm bringing a lot of what they said here. One of them pointed out that if I'm trying to think of exactly how it was phrased, it'll come to me if I keep talking, I'm sure.
Okay.
But the idea is that the difference is like, though you affect things in the mundane, right? The difference with doing witchcraft specifically and trying to do some things is it's affecting some things you wouldn't just do by happenstance, right? It's a focused influence, right? It's a focused on something else. You're trying to consciously bring something to you. And with that argument, you can say like things like prayer or positive thinking are forms of magic as we would define it, right? You're trying to, you know, somebody gets up in the morning, they look in the mirror and they say affirmations to themselves. What is that but trying to change the energy in and of themselves, right?
Right.
To have a more positive day or a positive outlook on themselves, right?
Okay.
That's a form of magic, right? Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
it's consciously trying to change something, you know?
Yeah. So would that be something if, so say for example, I was talking to, you know, some of my Christian Catholic relatives. And, you know, and if I were to basically explain when you talk about magic, it's in the same way like how they talk about prayer. You know, like it, so that would be like a very, you know, fair comparison.
Yeah, it would be fair, I think. And there is actually a whole history of Christian magic, like Kabbalah and like all of that sort of stuff. Like, there's a history of that. So it's not like any religion really gets out of it in a lot of ways. They're all practicing their own form of energy transformation, right?
Right.
I remember what I was gonna mention.
Okay.
So while magic is trying to focus your energy and on something, you also have to expend that energy in the real world as well. Like, it's not enough. You can't expect to light a candle and have money drop into your lap, right? You have to put yourself in the position to get money. You have to put yourself in the position to make those things happen. You can't just light a pink candle and expect a relationship to happen, right? You have to put yourself where you're going to meet people, right? You have to also expend in both worlds, right? Both the metaphysical and spiritual and magical energy world and the real one to get what you want. You can't rely on one or the other as well, because everything is made of that stuff. So therefore, everything matters, right? One of the examples that the outer court, someone in outer court brought up was that, you know, if you're applying for a job and you're doing a spell to get a job, but you're not putting out any applications, how do you expect that to work?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Like, it's not.
Boy, and how I wish that was the case. Okay, cool. Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest obstacles, you know, and even too, I've had a few people, like when we were doing the Kickstarter last year, and I was putting it out there on my Facebook feed and everything else like that, I did have a couple of people that would reach back to me and they said, like, well, hold on a sec. When you're talking about magic, are you talking about magic systems in games? And I was like, no, I'm talking about the real world modern day practices of magic and how they share that connection. And, you know, when people say it's like, well, hold on a sec, there are people actually trying to cast like fireball and charm spells and everything. And it was like, No, and I wish I could explain it better because I'm still learning too. You know, which is kind of one of the themes of the show here is, you know, those who don't know like me are hopefully learning with me. So knowing that, I think that that's a really good kind of shorthand for it. It's just, you know, like when witches talk about magic, it's, you know, very identical in a sense to how others talk about prayer. That sense of, you know, yeah, like basically, you know, like starting off with an internal practice to try and make an external change. But yes, it still requires, you know, like if you were praying for someone to feel better because they were sick, you still have to take them to the hospital. You still have to take them to the doctor. And then from there, the idea is that energy will help the doctor and help the hospital be able to heal the sick and everything like that, rather than there, you know, like I just...
Exactly!
Yeah,
you get it!
I just burned some candles, and now as a result, you'll be fine. Out you go. What? He fell down. His leg fell off. Oh no, it didn't work. Why? You know, all that kind of stuff. So that's good to know. Like, that's a really good equation that I know that, you know, a lug nut like me can actually understand. So, cool. I think the other thing I'm curious about with you, you know, and obviously with your own personal practices and everything like that, is when it comes to magic, was there a lot of kind of experimentation for you as far as like, you know, for example, if incense was something that you tried out and was like, yeah, for some reason this doesn't work, whether or not it set off allergies or, you know, you weren't feeling it, so to speak.
That's funny you say that.
Yeah.
That's funny you say that, because that's exactly what happened.
Oh, okay.
I used to use a lot of incense.
Nice.
But I am horribly allergic, like, to the world. Like, trees, bushes, grass. The things that incenses are often made out of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't use them. I don't really use them at the house. I have a crystal stone-based practice.
Yes.
Instead. So... when I do things, I use crystals and I use stones and things like that to represent things. So, you know, for instance, right, some might use an incense like lavender, right, for calming or something like that, right?
Right.
Instead of using lavender or, you know, and they pile it on with a bunch of other things, maybe stones or music or whatever, if you're trying to create this relaxing, you know, you're stressed out, so you're kind of doing this spell or ritual or, you know, what some people might call just self-care, right? Burning a candle, burning some incense, sitting back with a face pack, you know? Like, it's not any different, really, to me. And some witches might argue with me, right? They will. Like, as I say, I speak for myself and how I view things. So any witches listening to this are going to have different opinions. They're going to have different thoughts about how that works. But to me, it's the same thing, right? If somebody comes home after work, they're like, man, I am so stressed out after this day. I need to do something to relax myself. It's a ritual. It's an intention. Your intention is to shift your energy from stressed to relaxed, right? And whether or not you do that in a Wiccan way, or something they told you in a magazine or a blog or a YouTube video you saw or something like that, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. You're trying to take that energy and shift it into something else. So, you know, whereas somebody might come home and they'll say, I'm going to burn this lavender incense. It's relaxing. I'm going to get into the bath. The heat will relax me. I'm going to, you know, put a face mask on, that's going to relax me. I'm going to listen to this music, that relaxes me. I'm going to use my coloring app, that relaxes me. That's all trying to shift that energy, right? It's all trying to shift that energy. But for me, I forgo the incense, right? That doesn't work for me because it makes me sneeze and it makes me like get all stuffed up. So I don't do that. I use a stone instead. I use a stone known for relaxing.
Yeah.
Something like angelite or quartz is a good one, or rose quartz is good for a soft kind of relaxing vibe, right? and you kind of use that instead, you know? Like, I might sit there and just kind of worry the stone in my hands or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, so yeah, I mean, you base your practices on different things that work for you, right? And make you feel comfortable. Some people may be really olfactory oriented. So yeah, incense and oils and things like that are their jam, and that's what they do. Some people, it's really the music, and they pull out an instrument, right? And that's their thing. And all their spells and rituals have to do with music, right? And it just is so different for everybody. It's a matter of how can you tap into that part of yourself that's going to shift that energy to what you want it to be. Whether you're trying to relax or bring money into your life or a relationship, which are like basic ones that people do. I mean, those are like the three tops. Relaxation, relationships, and money.
Yeah.
Like that's, those are the three big ones and everything, whatever you're trying to do, you know, is going to work different for different people. So you have to, there is experimentation in that to get back to the original question, right? You know, you try what works for you. And some of the greatest parts of interacting with other witches that I've discovered this past year, again, shout out to the Outer Court group, is you people do things. They talk about what they do. And you're like, wow, I'm going to try that and see if it works for me. I never thought of doing things that way. You know, I never thought of doing a spell or a ritual that way, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what's great about it, right? You learn from each other. You grow from each other. And everybody's practice benefits from it. And therefore, everybody is richer for it. And their magic is more powerful for it, in essence.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything in the sense of kind of like, I guess the term that's popping in my head is like anti-magic. In the sense where, as a witch, are there certain things that you now kind of avoid because you feel as if like that interferes with your journey and your practices? So for example, like I know you mentioned, you know, sometimes, you know, like you know, throwing on music in the background or something to help with like getting to a meditative trance. I think you're the one who's mentioned that before. Maybe it was somebody else. But are there certain things where you tend to avoid or don't do? So for example, do you leave your phone outside of the room if you were doing a spell or a ritual? Or are there certain other things that you find that you have changed? So like, when someone decides that they want to be vegan, obviously the big thing that they avoid in their life is, you know, is meat. And to whatever level of veganism that they get into, whether or not they decide that not even eggs are on the menu or anything like that. So is there anything for you that is, in order to be a witch, you avoid or refrain from that you maybe used to do before? If that's making any sense.
Huh. Yeah, like did I stop doing certain things and stuff like that? Yeah. I mean,
Here's another way maybe of putting it. Since we go with the prayer comparison, there are many other religions where they have days of fasting. That in a sense where it's like, okay, in order to prove to yourself and other members of your faith, your intent in that religion, so to speak, you might fast, you know, for a few days or for a particular time period. Is there anything kind of like that? I think it's the other way I'm going at it, where it's basically, it's like, you know, it's not all just like, you know, spells and rituals and candles. You know, there are, to be a witch, there are certain expectations and certain sacrifices that you make that somebody who doesn't practice could just, you know, enjoy themselves with. Like, you know, I'm not a vegan. So I will chow down on a meatball sub any day I want to, because I don't have to make that sacrifice to prove to myself and to others that I'm vegan. You know what I mean? I wonder if that's maybe a better way of looking at it.
Yeah, what I'm going to say is that in some cases, depending on the person, there are. But it's not like a blanket every witch or every Wiccan does this, right? Mm. It's not a blanket. To practice magic, period, you have to do this, right? It's more like, for me to do it, I do this, okay. Right? There are some people who have those type of restrictions on their practice. Like, I'm never going to practice indoors. Outdoors is where I have to be, right? You know, but that's personal restrictions, not an in general, like, religious restriction, right? Like a blanket religious or magic restriction. It's something that person has decided for themselves, right? Or, you know, if they have a patron or something like that, they might give themselves restrictions based on that patron deity.
Okay.
Right? They might. Yeah. I mean, that's a thing that happens, you know, depending, you know, on who it is and what that person does, right? You know, you do different things to sort of transfer that energy to commitment to your deity, right? You do those things to transfer that energy that you would normally do doing those things as a energy toward your cementation of your relationship with your patron, with your deity, whoever that happens to be.
Okay. So there's some of the more obvious stuff. If you are a kitchen witch, it's not so much that you can't practice in the living room. It's more of like, well, it doesn't make any sense because, you know, that person's particular form of witchcraft involves some form of cooking or something that specifically takes place in the kitchen. They're not anti-living room. They're pro-kitchen.
Right. Exactly. Right. They have chosen to practice a type that does certain things. But that doesn't mean like it's like standard for everybody. That's that person. This person practices this way, so therefore they do these restrictions or they do these certain things. Okay. Or they have these certain traditions and things that they do. Yeah.
Okay. One of the other things, going back to some of the private conversations I've had with some other people, is do you feel that sometimes the word magic kind of has a little bit of baggage to it? You know, in the sense where it's like that word is used to mean so many different things. And most of the time, it's either connected with trickery, you know, when you look at, you know, professional magicians, illusionists, and that kind of stuff. And then also two elements of fantasy, you know, like the example we always give is the fireball spell and that kind of stuff. Do you feel that there are times where using the word magic, like, you know, like you've mentioned the time when you first talked, you know, told your dad that you wanted to be a witch. And then obviously, you know, he obviously had a very strong opinion about that. Do you feel that the word magic has some baggage with it that kind of makes it harder to explain to non-witches?
Yeah. I mean, it you have to define it, right? Yeah. Like it's if we're going to have a discussion, we have to define what that word means in context of that discussion. This was actually another discussion we had with the Outer Court that I've been talking to about. If you're having conversations with other people who practice magic, you kind of have to make sure you're on the same definition of what's happening, because even different witches have different definitions, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to say, this is how I'm using it. And you have to give it context, right? So that you know whether you're talking about David Copperfield or whether you're talking about, you know, magic in Lord of the Rings or magic in Harry Potter. I mentioned the turf, but, you know, like it's different, right? And even magic within like magic fantasy are different, right? If we're saying, okay, we're going to talk about magic and fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you still have to define it even more. Well, what type of magic fantasy are we talking about? You know, are we talking Gandalf, or are we talking, you know, something else?
Yeah.
You know, because the magic in Lord of the Rings is very different than the stuff that happens in other fantasy. I know the fantasy things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because, yeah. Just,
they're different. They're different vibes. They have different rules. They have different contexts. They have different purposes, etc. So.
Yeah. Like in the scene where Gandalf is, you know, talking to the mountain, he's actually, it sounds like he's casting a spell to try and get the mountain to calm down and not try and knock them off the side. But what he's actually doing is he's speaking in the language of mountains, and he's actually trying to talk to it and soothe it and calm it, you know, like, don't listen to Saruman and right. those kind of things. Yeah, it's a different form. It's a different approach. Yeah, yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, another example, like Marvel, right? Magic in Marvel.
Yeah.
You know, Scarlet Witch, Doctor Strange, any of those guys. That's completely different than Gandalf, all right? It comes from a different place, has different rules, has different vibe to it, has different atmosphere, has different purposes, right? So if you're talking about magic, and you're talking even just fantasy magic or fictional magic, like, you still have to define it even further because, I mean, just look at how many magic systems there are in role-playing games, right?
Yeah.
Like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and how different they are and how they even play out in a game versus like the rules and how you do that mechanics wise and what its intention is in the game. Just among role-playing games themselves, you would have to define what kind of magic you're talking about. Because if I say, hey, Ironbound has magic in it, the next question I'm going to be asked is, oh, what type of magic? Like, how does it work?
Yeah.
You know? Because yeah. that's a question that needs to be asked. And it's no different in the real world when you're talking to a witch or someone who practices magic, right? It's the same thing. You kind of have to define, well, what are you meaning by that versus what I'm meaning by that? And then you can start to have a conversation. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool. I had another question and then it just slipped in my head as I was starting to. As the wheels in my head and everything has been clicking, which happens too much sometimes. I mean, what are some of the most common misperception or misconceptions, rather than making up a word, right? What are some of the most common misconceptions that people have about modern day magic? To you, at least, you know, the ones where it's like, oh, I answered this question so many times that if you could just, you know, right here, right now, this is the final time that you have to, you know, address these misconceptions. You know, what are they for you?
The first one is that I already kind of mentioned, talking about, like, you can't just light a candle and expect things to happen.
Yeah.
People have this huge misconception that that's what happens, right? That we just have this magical thinking kind of thing going on, right? Like, we do our little spells and then things happen, you know, money appears on our doorstep, you know, the boss knocks on our door, you know, to give us a job, you know, any of that stuff, you know, the love of our life turns out to be the Amazon delivery guy or whatever, you know, like, and it doesn't work that way. And that's a huge misconception that other people who are not witches have. They think that we think that that's how it works. And anyone who works with magic, does magical things, knows that that's not the case. At least anyone who's practiced at it or done it for a long period of time. It doesn't work that way. Both things. Because the world is connected with magic. Therefore, everything you do has to be connected to it as well. And you can't expect something from nothing, right? You got to put the energy out there in all ways to make the thing happen. That's a huge misconception that people have that I would dismiss if I could.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, I believe that fever few calms fevers and that ginger will help a nauseated stomach, but I also believe in antibiotics,
yeah.
right? And you don't have to believe in one or the other. You can use both, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's a big one.
Yeah. Okay.
That I had. And I, yeah. I think that's the big one. I think that's the big one.
Yeah. Okay.
They have a big misconception on how we ourselves view what we do.
Yeah.
And make assumptions about how we think the world works, right? You know, and that's a huge thing. So if people take nothing else away, I would like them to take away that. That we are much more grounded in the real world and real things that happen in real life, quote unquote, as people like to say, you know, that's not how the world works, than people often imagine or give credit for. That, you know, magic isn't the answer to all things. It's a supplement and an aspect of life and a natural thing and a thing, a tool to be used, just like any other tool. But you also got to use the mundane tools, like looking for a job or going to the hospital or whatever it is that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Okay. How much of magic is about trying to understand the world that you're in? Because that's one of the things with some of the readings that I've been doing, it has very much seemed like, you know, before we actually understood that, you know, the Earth was a big ball floating in space and there were several other giant balls in space, you know, people would, you know, would develop certain practices as a way to try and kind of understand their place in the world and explain how things work. Is that something that applies, you know, when it comes to magic with you? It's kind of like your way of understanding your place in the universe and how things work. Because as much as we might say, oh, it's the 21st century, we understand how everything works. And yet, somebody can be on an airplane and look out the window and say, holy crap, the Earth is flat, you know. So it is that a way of kind of helping you kind of understand your place in things? Or is it all solely about your interaction with the world?
Oh, no. I mean, I think that magic, when you do it and you do an influence and you're trying to enforce influence on the world, tells you an incredibly a lot about yourself. You're learning about yourself and the world. I mean, because like I said, it goes back to that honesty, right? If I'm going to try to transform what's happening here, much I transform that energy into something that I want, and I need to be honest with myself, that means I need to know myself. That means I need to interrogate myself. That means I need to be very firm on what my morals are and who I am, right? That means I need to know that, and I need to be able to ask myself the uncomfortable questions, like, am I being selfish? Is this really, really what I want to happen or what needs to happen? And do I have a right to do this that I'm going to do? Another topic in that same thing that came up was the fact that, let's say you're going to use magic because somebody has done something to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to ask yourself, what kind of reasons are you doing that for, right? What kind of reasons are you trying to transform this, right? Because magic that transforms other things transforms yourself as well. And you do magic with ill intention. You do magic with not an honest look at why you want to do those things and with intention. Then you get this Dorian Gray situation going on, in my opinion, where you look fine on the outside, but it does something rotten to your insides, right? If you're not honest with yourself, that sort of thing eats away at you. You know, and the things you do, because they're not honest.
Okay.
And who are you? You have to interrogate, who are you to make this judgment, right? Going back to Lord of the Rings, when, you know, they're in Moria, in the most people I assume have seen the movie, you know, when they're in Moria and Frodo's talking to Gandalf, and, you know, Frodo's like, I wish Bilbo had killed Gollum, right?
Yeah.
And Gandalf's response is, who are you, you know, to do that? Even the wisest cannot see all ends. You know, I believe what he says is something like, people who deserve life get death, and people who deserve death get life. And are you going to give it to them?
Yeah.
Even the wisest cannot see all ends, right? You have to interrogate yourself like that. So I think doing magic really does get you to know yourself and learn about yourself and who you are and who you are in the world and who you are in the universe, as well as your place in it, right? Because it's on all planes. And so you have to do that. And that's hard. I mean, that's hard. And people don't want to do that. It sounds easy, right? One of my favorite quotes, and I may have even quoted on here before, was The Neverending Story. Do you remember that movie?
Oh, I do. It's been a long time. I remember that movie. But yes, yeah, well, I remember that one very well.
Yeah. When the guy, Inglewood, comes down, and he's all excited because Atreyu made it past the first gate. And then he's talking to Falcor, and he says, oh, now he has to deal with the second gate, where he has to face his true self. And Falcor says, that doesn't sound so hard.
Yeah.
And Inglewood says, that's what everyone thinks. But kind men find out that they are cruel. Most men find out that they are selfish. Most men, when faced with their true selves, run away screaming. Right?
Yeah.
It's that level of interrogation you need to have with yourself. And that's what I also mean by being responsible. Right? That's responsible. Don't doing magic or trying to transform anything without being honest about why you're doing it. It's not great. And, you know, it's not useful. It's not useful to anyone. And like I said, that applies to any situation, right? You had talked about like an intervention before, right? And if you're going to do something like that and interfere with somebody's life, and make a judgment about them, you need to be damn sure, right? That's what needs to happen. And if it needs to happen, that you do in a way that is benefiting them truly and not just what you think would benefit them, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's not going to end well. I mean, that just goes for mundane things as well, relationships, you know? You're with a partner, right? And if you're not honest with yourself, that relation, you can't be honest with them. And then that relationship is just going to be based off someone that you're acting like and not someone that you truly are. And it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And that's why I say that being a someone who uses magic is a lifestyle and not just a thing that you do to make flowers happen, you know, turning water into wine or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not that. You know, it's a belief that you can change things. And in order to do so in a manner that won't hurt you or others, you have to interrogate that very carefully before you do anything. You know?
Okay. Is it something, because I've been going through a few books, like I've borrowed some from a couple of people I know, and, you know, looked over a few, like, slightly stolen PDFs online. And I have found quite a lot. Yeah, you know, like no judgment. You know, I know people have stolen some of my PDFs, so I think it's only fair I steal someone else's. I see quite a few kind of like pre-made spells. And mm-hmm. to me, that almost kind of sounds very counterpoint to how you talk about the practice of magic as being far more internal and everything like that. When you first started, did you rely on a lot of written material of people who, you know, like their own kind of published Book of Shadows or spell books and that kind of thing, and then adapt and adjust? Or were you just kind of figuring some of your own stuff out completely by yourself? Like how much of a guide, I guess, is what I'm wondering, did you have when you first started?
Well, it's just like anything else, right? I definitely started with stuff that was in books, right? Because I didn't know, you know? And it's like a guide, like cooking, right? You're provided with recipes, right? And, you know, you can use them and have successful results from them most of the time, as long as you're indicating, you know, your honesty with why you're doing this particular thing. I mean, it's just like anything else. You learn, right? It's like any other skill, you know? You're a musician, right? So you start learning the guitar. The first thing you're going to learn probably are other people's things before you start making your own. Mm. You start cooking, you're going to use other people's recipes before you start making your own. You do cross stitch, you're going to use other people's patterns before you start making your own cross stitch patterns or embroidery or things like that. It's like any other skill like that, in my opinion. You start out using what other people guide you to use. But over time, you become confident in your abilities and you don't really need to do those things anymore. Even though you will still look at recipes and be like, oh, I can use that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, even if you're a cook, you know, my husband, he loves to cook. You know, he loves it. Right. And he still sees recipes and been like, oh, I can use this instead of this and I can play with this. So even if you're looking at what would you call pre-made spells, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can either use it as it is to try it out and see if it resonates with you. Like, does something they're doing in here resonate with me? Right? Does something in here work for me? Or you can say, oh, I like this bit. I'm going to take this bit and I'm going to use it in my own stuff now.
Okay. You know? Okay. I literally just had a thought that was popping into my head about this, is that a few months back I was in Ottawa and I was kind of killing a little bit of time. I was doing some Christmas shopping, and I decided to walk around and I was specifically looking to see if I could find any books on Wicca, paganism, magic, and everything like that. And the ones that I found were in the self-help section. And I remember thinking at the time, just like, I don't know about this, you know, like I could see maybe there not being enough demand that they get their own section, but I found it really interesting that they're in the self-help. But now, you know, after having this conversation, it does kind of seem like it's also doesn't sound like it's too far off the mark. What are your thoughts about that? Like, you know, to you, does that make sense for books on Wicca and witchcraft to be in the self-help section?
Usually I find them in like New Age and spiritual section if I'm going to do that. But in the self-help section, I can totally see that, because to me and to a lot of other witches and Wiccans, both, you know, whether you're just Wiccan or you're just a witch or both, I don't think a lot would disagree with me, maybe. But again, as ever, these are only my own opinions. But the goal is to be the best person you can be,
mm-hmm.
right? To be the best person, to be yourself, right? To truly find who you are and be that and choose that, right? And be your best version of the self that you are born as. Not to change yourself necessarily, but learn how to be the best version of yourself. How to do things that support the best version of yourself that you can be, you know? And so in that sense, yeah, that's self-help. You know, you're doing all these things to do that, to be the best version. And a lot of people would say to be who the goddess, the universe calls you to be, you know, who you were meant to be. We are all meant here to be unique. We are all here and we all have our purpose in this life, big or small, right? Big or small, it doesn't matter. I truly believe that every purpose is valuable, right? We can't all be, you know, Nobel Prize winners, you know, or people who invent something that changes people's lives. But it's not necessary. It's not necessary. We are faced with decisions every day that, while they may not affect everybody in the world, they affect everybody in your world. And that's valuable. And that's important enough to be the best version of yourself you can be. Because while you may not have an influence on every single person in the world, you can have a huge influence on somebody in your life and change their life or make them think about things differently. And that is worthy and that is important and that spreads, right?
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah, self-help, you know, sure.
Okay. Okay. One last question
I have. That was very philosophical.
Yeah?
But, you know, I know I kind of went off on that, but that's, you know, really I feel like important and at the crux of it. You know what I mean? Too many people put success or how valuable they are on things that really aren't what you should be measuring it by. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah. No, I do completely. It's kind of like an internal struggle that I'm going through at the moment, because I'm at a moment right now where it's like, where I'm looking at giving up the full-time freelance stuff because, you know, it's turning out to be harder in many ways that I'm just don't want to put up with anymore. You know, it's like the parts that I don't like, I'm really disliking. But it's the problem mm-hmm. that I have been having internally is that kind of sense of, for, you know, the 5 years that I've been doing it, it was a sense of, this is what I was put on this earth to do. This was my thing. And I got spoiled early on in my design career of winning a couple of awards, and that has really played with my ego. And I think I'm starting to realize now that it's just like, I let my ego get in the way. I'm just like, no, I'm the greatest motherfucker in this room, and I deserve to be at the top of this pile, you know, kind of thing. And now it's just like, no, it's not about that. That's a terrible way of looking at it. You know, like I've started feeling like I'm losing track of what it was that I actually, you know, the energy that I was getting back out of things and trying to force it to make it into something else that it wasn't. But yeah, no, I do.
Right.
I do very much feel like I get that. I understand that. That part's very much resonating with me. Yeah.
Well, I have two little stories about that to fuller illustrate this point.
Okay.
One is a few years ago, I was lucky enough to go with a group to the American Association of Community Theater competition and in Texas. And we were competing to represent the South at the national competition. And part of that was a convention. You went down and it was a convention about acting. There were acting classes. There were makeup classes. I had a blast. We came in second alternate, which was amazing. But we, one of the things, that's not just a humble brag, I have a point. there was a talk by a playwright. He wrote, Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Will. And, his name starts with a D, it's killing me now, but he had a talk. And in that talk, he said, I always dislike it when actors come up to me and say that they hate auditioning, because I feel like if you hate auditioning, you don't really like acting. Mm. Because what is acting but auditioning, right? It is the act of it, but you're putting all the worth on whether or not you get the part, instead of, I get an opportunity to act today.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're putting it on the result and not enjoying the act itself of going into that audition room and being able to act and being able to have that joy of acting. And ever since then, I've tried to have that attitude with everything that I do, every job that I apply for, every thing I audition for, every RPG gig I submit an application to, everything like that. I try to think, this is not based on the result. This is me doing what I like to do. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself is worthy enough, right? The second one, and I think I may have quoted this before in one of our podcasts previously, but it's one of my favorite quotes, and it comes from Cool Runnings, the movie with John Candy about the Jamaican bobsled team.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that movie?
I do.
And in it, at one point, John Candy, the coach, is talking to Darius, the bobsledder. And Darius asks him why he cheated. He cheated at the Olympics. And Darius asked him why he cheated. And he said, because I had to win. He said, a gold medal is a wonderful thing. But if you're not enough without it, you'll never be enough with it. Yeah. Awards are great, but if you aren't enough without them, if you aren't enough without accolades, then you're never going to be enough. Like the awards are not going to magically make that happen for you. They just aren't. And yeah. So those are my two things about that.
Okay.
I don't know how we slipped into talking about magic originally, and now we're philosophizing, but that's the beauty of magic. That's what it is. That's what it causes you to do and think about, because it really is about your own personal power and what you can affect. And knowing and prioritizing what those things are is super important.
Nice. Okay. I think that's a good way to close that, actually. I think that, like, I know it's, you know, that covers everything for me for now. It's one of the beauties of having this as, like, a podcast is that, you know, when enough questions come up later on, I can just, we hit record and then I just ask away. But for now, as far as, like, a general approach, you know, the view from, you know, where you sit on modern day magic, I think that was a really good way to kind of encapsulate it, for me at least. So is there anything else that you feel is important enough to add on this topic?
I would just say that if anyone has made it this far and is still listening, I would encourage you to think about what sort of things you do in your life that would fit into the definition of magic. What things do you do in your life that are meant to transform something in yours? Something as simple as, I need coffee to transform myself into a human being that can function in the world. That's a ritual that's transformative. And yeah, it's drugs, but you know, that sort of thing. What do you do? What do you say? What do you say to yourself? You know, counting to 10, you know, people give that advice, counting to 10 when you're angry, that's meant to do that, right? That's meant to transform that initial anger you're feeling and giving you the time to calm down and come at something with a more calm viewpoint to progress forward. What sort of things do you do in your life that are meant to do that? And can you do them more purposefully to make them even more powerful instead of just doing them unconsciously without thinking? Right.
Right.
That's what I would say.
Okay. Very nice. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode. And you know what? We're like on time.
Yeah, we are actually.
Wow.
I'm looking at the clock. We are.
We're getting better at this. although some listeners for might sure. be like, hold on, this is supposed to be an hour and a half show. They're cutting it short this time. The intention from day one was for this to be like hour-long episodes. I think 45 minutes is what we said.
Yeah.
But eventually it was like, okay, we'll try and aim for an hour, you know. So, there we go. But no, this is good. And thank you for sharing this with myself and with our audience. Because these are still very personal questions, you know, I mean, like that would be the same thing as, you know, saying it's like, you know, when you're praying, what goes through your mind, you know, like when you talk to God, you know, like, what does he sound like and all this other kind of stuff. Those can be like very deeply personal things. So I appreciate the fact that you're willing to share this with us, you know, to help us learn more about how you know, view and use magic and interpret it in your life and everything. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, I thank you for that. I like to think about those things, so I don't mind talking about it. And I hope that somebody gets something out of it. Because like I said, even if one person gets something out of it, then it was worth it. Or even if I get something out of it, just talking about my own viewpoint, you know, sometimes that's what it takes to solidify what you truly think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm getting a benefit out of it too. So it's not completely unselfish of me. You know, it's forcing me to put what I believe into words, you know, and in a place that I can define it and I can speak with confidence about what it is that I actually do and think, which, as I said, is the whole purpose of magic and things beforehand. So it kind of all works out.
Yeah, it does. It's going to be interesting next time because we're going to start talking about magic in RPGs. If you listen to this before that episode drops, on our, in our Facebook group, we shared a post. It's a really great, very complete list of the 12 things to consider when building a magic system. When we go to look at that, I think it'd be interesting for us to kind of look at it as like, you know, from a gaming standpoint in general, but then I think it'd be interesting to look at those 12 steps or questions from the modern day magic, you know, from the real world practice, so to speak, to see if there are kind of like, you know, some parallels and interesting ways for us to kind of look at it from like a gaming standpoint. So I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, this was really good. This was really good. I like this. Nice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Alrighty then. Well, Danny, why don't you sign us off?
All right. Well, that was all for this time. Please join us next time, and we hope you have a little gaming in your magic and a little magic in your gaming.
The Covenstead Podcast was created and produced by Danielle Delisle and Todd Crapper. Theme music written and composed by John Thompson from the Rook and Rask channel on Twitch. Definitely check them out. Special thanks to all of our backers, Alex, Tim Brannan, Chris Atrata, Century Guild, Nicholas Diak, Fool's Moon Entertainment, Kaboom.com, -50s, no apologies, Brian P. Kurtz, Jason LeDuc, Civ Light, Revna, Derek Simsek, Danielle Thomas, Phil Watson, Jacob Wood, and Victor Wyatt. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.